Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is brought to you by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Berry.
And another gathering with you. It's always a pleasure to sit here and know that out there in these great United States, wherever you may be, you've tuned in to see what we're talking about, and we're talking about things that we think are of interest to you. Home and Family Finance, we ask the question, are you financially fit? Because ultimately, at the bottom of this effort is the need to understand the importance of financial literacy. We must all do a much better job, and the more we have in education when it comes to our finances, the better off we will all be. While you say, well, that's not such a sexy topic, it is, because once you learn to do this correctly and you have some answers that you can work with, you can make lots of money. You can make sure that you will be financially fit, not only now, but when you get ready to retire. And, of course, that goes for everyone who's listening to us, including the thousands of military people across the United States and around the world who are serving us, and we thank you for your service. And in that regard, I read something that really struck my fancy. And it was a story that is being written, and I hope it's all fiction and always will be, by an author that takes issue with whether or not you, if you're in the military, are being invited back with open arms, or whether or not you are going to face what I faced when I came out of Vietnam back in the early 70s. I am a Vietnam vet, and when I returned to the States, it was not a welcome return. It was not a welcome return at all. And so we're going to spend some time talking with Blair London, author of Jobs for Angels. He's going to be with us. We'll start with her in just a minute. But I also want to tell you about my second guest today. She says something that I think will strike your fancy. She says that we are leaving roughly $4 billion in reward value on the table each year because we don't sign up for or utilize the credit cards that offer value to you. Are you guilty of that? Do you have any idea how much money you can actually make by choosing the right cards and applying for the rewards that are associated with? Just think of that term, $4 billion, folks. A lot of money. Anyway, we're going to get to after our conversation, which comes up now with Blair London. She joins us from Minnesota. She has written several books for many years. And what I want to understand, let me just read a paragraph or at least a phrase. Americans were outraged last week when there were reports that members of the Zeta Beta Tau fraternity from the University of Florida spat on and disrespected veterans. The university moved quickly to suspend those suspected of that action. Blair, did that ever happen?
Well, I think that does happen, and that's because these people, they don't have an idea of, they're more angry with, that these soldiers had to go to war to begin with, or be on the battlefront, whenever this happens, they're not attacking the right source, so to speak.
Yeah. So the point that you're making, or you want to make, as I understand it, is that the soldier, be it airman or be it Navy, Air Force, Marine, the serviceman becomes the symbol of the things that Americans don't like about going to war. Is that kind of – are we getting close to where
yeah.
you're – okay.
Right.
Okay. As I mentioned to you, as a Vietnam vet – coming home was probably almost as difficult as going to Vietnam. We were so, I'm going to use the term despised, but I will use the term there was a lack of respect, a lack of appreciation of our service. I remember coming back and taking my uniform off when I got to my home city of Detroit because there was so little regard for me as a serviceman. So what prompted you? What drove you, or why did you decide to write on this subject? Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, it's based on the lives of three different men that I know, that I knew on a more intimate level, and others that I've heard about that were affected mostly by the Vietnam War. And like you said, a lot of them, they not only didn't receive the help that they needed when they came home, but a lot of people were beginning to think that, you know, this war is just foolish. We shouldn't be there in the first place. You know, we just need to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, the soldier becomes the symbol of what, you know, this represents.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The question I was going to ask, do you think this was because of the result, the end result? I mean, we just left. We up and left Vietnam. We didn't win the war. I'm not sure it's safe to say we lost it, but we certainly lost face. Do you think that's why Americans responded the way they did? What did your subjects tell you?
I don't think it's because they lost face. I think it's because it got drawn out so long, and more people had to go over there, and more people were getting killed, and, you know, there were too many people right around us that were getting killed. You know, I remember having a girlfriend at the time, and this probably ages me, but having a girlfriend at the time who was a little older than me, but she had a boyfriend who went into the war, into the Vietnam War, and he was killed just the week before he was to come back home, and they had been planning on getting married after he got home.
Oh.
So that was quite a sad situation.
Well, I don't think. Go ahead.
Well, then you see a lot of the, you know, later. I mean, and one of the reasons I wrote this book is because I said there were different people that I've known, and I know that a lot of these vets have fears of different kinds, loud noises, large groups of people. They can't handle those type of situations. I remember one guy, he would
hold that story. Just
under the table or something.
We're talking with Blair London, author of the book Jobs for Angels. When we come back, we'll listen to her explain again why she's written the book and whether she thinks it's possible that it can happen again with our returning veterans. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
We want you to be a part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Or maybe just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
The fact is, thousands of our sons and daughters, maybe husbands, girlfriends, wives, friends, are coming home from various parts of the world where they have put their lives on the line to protect us. They're coming back, and hopefully they're coming back to situations where they can resume their civilian lives and be proud of what they did during their military time. But as my guest today, author Blair London, points out in a book that she wrote, it's fiction, Jobs for Angels. She points out that vets are being mistreated or could be mistreated. And much of what she's written is based on the experience that she had with some of those coming out of Vietnam. So Blair, I guess the question is, there are different places that our soldiers are coming back from, and we may not be able to look at one place and say, oh, we were victorious. Do you think it's likely that this could happen again for soldiers returning home today?
Oh, I think it could happen again. And I don't think that they receive, you know, the help that they need. Physically, I think, you know, they receive help, but emotionally, mentally, they don't. And depending upon, you know, how much bloodshed they've seen and stuff, you know, it affects them.
Yeah.
And loud noises affect them. I know somebody who was afraid every time he'd see, you know, a plane overhead, or every time he'd hear a loud noise, he'd jump under a table.
Wow.
And I actually write about this in the book, where Taylor dates this Jean, who during their courtship, she discovered that he would occasionally sit crouched in the corner as if he was afraid that somebody would get him. And in Jobs for Angels, Veterans Nightmare Realities, Taylor also had dated another war vet who would occasionally hide under a table or in a corner when he'd hear some unusual sound outside, as he was sure they were coming to get him. So, you know, this happens a couple times in the book, and I remember, you know, seeing guys like this that had come back from Vietnam.
Is it your position that, are you trying to suggest in the book that these soldiers, whether they be, again, what branch they may serve, is of no importance, but that they are not getting the adequate health care that they need even now, or is that an assumption, or is that the truth?
Well, I don't think that they are getting the right care that they need. I mean, again, physically, you know, physical health, yeah, you know, because you see that all the time. You know, soldiers without a limb or something, and they're getting the right prosthetic and stuff. So they're getting the physical help that they need, but they're not getting the mental, emotional help that they need to go along with that. And then there's others that don't have physical injuries that need, you know, this mental, emotional help.
Let me ask you, from the research that you've done, and we're talking, by the way, with author Blair London, her book is Jobs for Angels, how big of a problem is this?
No, I think it's a huge problem, and I think that there is a lot of times that some effects of the war happen later. I just heard a woman tell me that her husband, all of a sudden, you know, he was a war vet. He worked in HR for a long time, and now he's suddenly afraid of being with people.
Wow, jeepers, that's. That is scary, and first of all, let me thank you for writing the book. There was no such book like this when I came home from Vietnam. There is a book now out there written by Blair London. It's called Jobs for Angels. When we come back, we'll ask Blair to tell us exactly what she hopes to accomplish, and then she'll tell you how you can get the book if you're interested. Okay, this is Home and Family Finance. You're listening to Paul Berry here on Radio America. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Home, family, future, how does yours look? Are you financially fit? Our program sponsors care about this and want you to know. There's the Defense Credit Union Council, and we thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit, along with the Credit Union National Association. Again, companies that care about your financial well-being. The Defense Credit Union Council, by the way, and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness, and I said that off the top, being financial ready, being financially fit, equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of military SAVES in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. How do you fight a war if you're worried about your dollars, about your family, about your pocketbook, about losing your home? Military SAVES is a way that you can ensure that you're going to be in better shape. It's a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, reduce debt, and build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military SAVES acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. You're not in it by yourselves, guys and gals. There are people out there that care about you, and they're ready to help you. All you have to do is reach out. Military SAVES. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And you don't have to be in the military to save. You know that. All of us should be saving something all of the time. And all of us should be listening very carefully to my guest, Blair London, who took particular issue with the way Vietnam vets coming home were treated. And she wrote a book. It's a book of fiction. We admit that. It's called Jobs for Angels. But she's taking a look at the possibility of it happening again, that our returning veterans being treated worse than those who returned from Desert Storm. Or as she says, there are, from her point of view, you believe there are isolated incidents of this happening even now, which are not fiction but real. Is that right, Blair?
Correct.
Well, as I asked you before, the size of the problem, and you say it's huge, you think it's really big, and I guess you think it's going to grow here. So what do you hope to accomplish? What's the purpose? What's your message, the takeaway from this book?
Well, what I hope to accomplish by writing about these war vets is that my book, Jobs for Angels, will help people become more aware of these men who have served our country and are damaged and need help.
Well,
you know, it seems like there's too many people when they're broken, they walk away because they don't realize the whole, you know, what all is involved and how intense it is. And some of these vets act out in their dreams, which again, in the book, Jobs for Angels, Ashley falls in love with Trevor, has crazy dreams, and he often dreams of the enemy and tries fighting back. And he ends up acting out in his dreams, thinking she's the enemy, and he's on the battlefront, and he eventually kills his angel.
Wow. Jeepers, that's pretty heavy stuff, Blair. It's interesting, you know, when we think about the number of veterans that are coming home, that they're not greeted and treated with respect, or even able to get their. And I know one of the things you talk about in this was getting their jobs, returning to their jobs. One of the conditions that you create in the book is that when they come back, they're unable to get their jobs. But that's a terrible feeling after you've been over there to serve your country, that you can't come back and pick up your life where you left it.
Right, right. And, you know, they suffer from this post-traumatic stress disorder, and, you know, that's a hot topic today, and war vets, but anybody else in a situation where they have post-traumatic stress disorder from other things, you know, they're given, you know, special dispensation on their job, they're giving or consideration, they're giving the help that they need, and yet these soldiers went to fight for our country, to defend our country, and yet they're not given the help that they need.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty bad stuff. Okay, where can your book be found, Blair? Again, give us a title and where it can be found.
Okay, Jobs for Angels, Veterans Nightmare Realities is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and as well as several other books that I have written. And it's also, for those who don't like to read but would prefer to listen to the book, it's available in audio format, too, on Amazon.
Okay, that's a great point, too, that you can get the book and you can listen to it as well. So, Blair, thank you so much, Blair Donner, for joining us. Thank you for writing the book. Thank you for taking time to be with us. Jobs for Angels is the name of this book, and it's available to you. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how much money you're leaving on the table because you're not using the correct cards or getting the benefits. I'm talking $4 billion with a B, folks. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Well, I think, I don't know about where you are, but here, where I am, the weather has broken. It is beautiful out. The sun is out, and we are heading into the busy summer season. And at that point, as you know, many of us will travel. Summer travel is big, big business, folks, and we'll be heading all over the world, not only across these United States, but around the world. And you will be racking up billions of dollars in annual credit card debt while simultaneously leaving, and this is the part that got my attention, simultaneously leaving some $4 billion, that's four with a B, folks, $4 billion in rewards value on the table each year, meaning that, yeah, you're going to have the debt, but you also have some rewards in this deal, but you're not picking it up. This, the credit card comparison website, CardHub Today, released the 2015 credit card rewards report. And that, I think, is the headline here, that of all of the rewards that are available, we leave so much of it on the table that rightfully could go into your pocket. Now, the report analyzes the earning and redemption rates of all of the non-co-branded consumer credit cards from the 10 largest issuers. The average American spending habits was then used to identify not only the best consumer credit cards from each major issuer, but also to rank all key aspects of each credit card credit rewards program. To talk about that, we've invited Jill Gonzalez. She is the spokesperson for Wallet Hub. Her appearances are numerous. She knows what she's talking about. Everything from ABC News to Wall Street Journal. And she gives us her take on consumer financial issues and has been featured in publications such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNBC. And I read those to you not because Jill thinks it's important, but we'd like to legitimize and let you know that we bring people who know what they're talking about. Jill, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Were you surprised by the results of this study?
Thank you, Paul. Well, I think that we here on the research team at CardHub were too surprised at the stat that you pointed out. We're leaving $4 billion in annual rewards on the table, and that's after in 2014 we spent as a nation $57 billion in new credit card debt alone. We're projected for another $60-plus billion in 2015. And the credit card reward industry right now, there's some lucrative deals out there, and it's our job to take advantage of them.
It sure is, boy. That's a lot of money, and as you said, I mean, we're doing this, and so why not, if in fact there are rewards, there's goodness to this. Going into debt, we know what that is, but if I can, in the process, save some money, how does that break down, or have you tried to break it down as to how much money that really could amount to each person if they were to collect? If everybody got what they were supposed to get or could get, what are we talking per person? Any idea?
Yeah, so the difference in rewards value between the best rewards credit card that we saw and the worst card that we saw is about $740 over the first 2 years that the account is open. So almost a grand there.
Wow. So if I were to do my business and take care of business, I could put an extra $1,000 or thereabout in my pocket is what we're really saying, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, these card issuers are being really competitive right now. They know that Americans want to spend. You know, the economy is doing well right now, and mm-hmm. we're ready to make bigger purchases, you know, other than homes and cars that I think a lot of people have been putting off for a few years. But we're also willing to just spend on everyday items a little bit more than we might have been in the past.
Interesting. It's an interesting behavior that we have. And in just a minute, we're going to get to some of the cards that offer the most rewards. But I want to first get to this question, if you can answer it. Why are credit cards, why do they do this? Why do card companies offer rewards? Is it just to tempt us? What's the purpose here?
Yeah, again, it's because they know they have to be competitive to really compete with one another and draw in either more members or more customers. So they're offering rewards. And again, I think it depends, too, it's how they have these rotating categories. They're pairing up with a lot of other brands and really cross-promoting. So it's not just, you know, all about them. They know that pairing with Amazon for a quarter, pairing with Starbucks for a quarter, things like that, that's really where the market is right now. So it's not only for your American Expresses and your Capital One cards, but it's for the brands that they can kind of hitch up with and offer these rewards to certain segments of their consumer industries.
And we're talking with Jill Gonzalez, who is a spokesperson for CardHub, I should say. Generally, Jill, when somebody gets some money, somebody loses money. So in this trade, if you will, who's getting and who's losing dollars here?
Well, I think that the one thing that card companies do to kind of mix up the consumers is, again, use some programs that consumers have to opt into. So that might be rotating categories, that might be, you know, preventing customers from earning bonus rates if the spending categories are not activated each quarter. So they can kind of flaunt these great programs that they have, but if you're the forgetful type or not even knowing what you have to really opt into, mm-hmm. that's when the consumers are leaving that money on the table.
Okay. So a lot of this then has to be self-activated, you have to motivate, you have to do something in order to get what comes to you. And human nature being what it is, the card companies know also that some of us are just not going to do what's required. Is that the way it kind of works out too?
Yeah, and not every issuer does this, or not even every card does this, so avoid the hassle if you are forgetful. But there's plenty of options out there that don't have those opt-in categories that you can definitely take advantage of.
Okay, well, let's talk. Let's get to some of the issues. Obviously, you pointed out the difference in rewards value between the best rewards credit card and from the best issuer and the best rewards card from the worst issuer. I think over the first 2 years, the accounts are open. Tell us who should we start with the best, or should we start with the worst, Jill?
We can start with the best.
Okay.
Capital One is the best overall issuer for rewards. Out of a score of 100, they got an 86.2 on our report, so a nice solid B+. And the Capital One Rewards cards themselves do well across the board. They actually rank in the top three for each category that we looked at. And, of course, they range from cash back to spending on certain categories, whether it's gas, drugstores, restaurants, groceries, things like that.
So, listen, I think we've all seen the commercials. I know I certainly have, where the guy comes out, one of the a well-known actor or actress, and they say, you're going to get some cash back everywhere, every time. And we've seen that. When we come back here, I want you to tell me how that works. How does it work? And if it does work so well, why aren't all the credit cards doing what Capital One is doing? You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My guest is Jill Gonzalez, and she knows a thing or two about credit cards. Stay with us.
We want you to be a part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Or maybe just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is Jill Gonzalez, and we're talking. She's with Wallet Hub, folks, and we're talking about, they just did a study that was completed of 2015's best credit card rewards programs. And Jill has just pointed out that Capital One, when all was said and done, turns out to be the best. Shall we call it the best card? How do we describe that, Jill?
The best rewards credit card. Yes.
Okay, the best rewards credit card. So that raises the issue: how come we all don't have Capital One rewards card? Why didn't everybody didn't have this card?
Well, first of all, you have to be eligible for this card, and that's a lot of things that people forget. Just because you see a great ad for it and you've heard that the rewards program is excellent, if you have less than excellent or at least good credit, then you're not going to be able to get, say, the Capital One Venture Rewards card, which is the one that we saw was the best. So I think that is what's stopping a lot of people. You know, just because you apply doesn't mean that you are yet eligible for that card. But if you are, you can say, or you can really get and earn a monetary value of about $1,500, and that's across the first 2 years of having that card.
Wow, $1,500 you can earn back if in fact you qualify for the card. What would keep me from qualifying for this card?
Well, again, I think they're looking for people with excellent credit, so that's having a score of 680 or higher, or good credit if you do have some more references or things that you can point to that shows that you're going to be paying your bill on time and things like that.
So if you don't have 680, go home. Don't even apply. I mean, it's not going to happen, basically, right? I mean, that's the bottom line.
You can apply, but just have it in the back of your mind that you might not get it. But you can still get a different Capital One card and kind of work your way up there.
Okay. But it really is an incentive for you to pay your bill and have a good credit rating, right?
Yeah, I mean, that I think is the essence of rewards cards. They are rewarding you for being either a good member or a good customer. You know, you are kind of doing what you're holding up your end of the bargain. You're paying your bills on time, things like that. And this is what they're rewarding you with.
And what they say in the ad is true. In other words, you're going to get something back for every dime that you spend. I mean, that's what it seems to be implying. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the reward currencies are what's different. So there's, you know, travel currency, there's just straight cash back, and then there's the merchandise trade-in option as well.
We're talking about Capital One being the best. And I also note that you say the best rewards card on the market is currently the Barclay card, Arrival Plus. Is that better than Capital One?
Yes. So when we're looking at overall issuers, Capital One is the best. Their rewards cards did well across the board. They ranked in the top three for each category. But when you're singling out just one single card, that's when the Arrival Plus Barclay card is the best. So we talked about Capital One earning you about $1,500 over the first 2 years.
Yeah.
Barclays gives you back over $1,600 across the first 2 years, and that's in travel rewards.
That's amazing. That's a lot of money. And so if I qualify, I get the card, and if I use it to travel, I'm going to get, in 2 years, I could get $1,600 back in my pocket.
That's right. And, of course, we always say, you know, identify your spending habits before you get one of these cards.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
you are one that travels, then that Barclay card option is a great one for you. If you're not, then you want to look for cards with extra cash back on travel or gas, maybe, groceries, things like that.
Yeah. My guest is Jill Gonzalez. She is spokesperson for Wallet Hub. We're talking about the best credit cards that pay you the most in return. And some you have to do something to get it back, but you want to do that. Jill, let me ask you this question, because I see another TV actress, and her name escapes me, but she comes on and says, if you have this one, you can get any seat. They can't deny you any seat. You're going to get the best seats available. True?
Well, when we looked into it, that is another Capital One card that I think that you're talking about. For the most part, we saw those things were true. So not only did we look at how much cash back or the monetary value of rewards across 2 years that you're getting, we also looked and really looked at the details of rewards policies. We had a score of 5. That was the best score.
Mm-hmm.
And Capital One got 5 out of 5 points. So that means they're pretty transparent about their policies, which is, of course, always important if you take the time to read the fine print. So obviously less blackout dates and things like that. But we do always stress you don't have to worry about blackout dates or anything expiring if you choose the straight cash back option.
The straight cash back option is what? What is that? You mean you're just going to get dollars back?
Right. So instead of getting travel points or things like that, you're going straight for the cash.
That's a better thing to do, is it?
I mean, unless you know exactly how your travel points are working, which a lot of people do, then my advice is always to go for the cash back. No blackout dates. It's never
yeah.
going to expire on you. You know exactly what you're getting.
Okay. So, and what you're saying is know what your habits are. Some cards might work for you if you know what your habits are. Others are not going to work for you because you're never going to really be able to take advantage of what they're offering because you don't meet that criteria.
Exactly. There's some cards that really pride themselves on staying at nice restaurants or staying at nice hotels, dining out at fine restaurants. But if you know that you're a homebody who likes to stay at home, then you want to offer the cards with better grocery points and things like that.
All right. My guest is Jill Gonzalez. I'm learning a lot. I hope you are too, folks. When we come back, what we haven't learned is the worst card. Or we won't call it the worst, the one that comes in last. How's that? Okay. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My guest today is Jill Gonzalez, spokesperson for Wallet Hub. Her company, Card Hub, did a Card Hub study and came up with the best credit card rewards programs. They also told us that about $4 billion of rewards is left sitting on the table because you either didn't activate or you were in the wrong place for what you should be getting. But she also says that this is true, that lots of money, that if you've got the right card and you're doing the right thing, you can earn up to $1,500 to $1,600 in 2 years. That's just a lot of money that could make a difference in terms of what you're doing. Jill, thank you so much. We've talked about the best card. We've talked about the best overall user, the best reward card in the market, and the differences between. What we have not talked about is the card that came in last for a variety of reasons. Which card is that, and why did they come in last, and what were the reasons?
So the card that came in last when we looked at this study was the Wells Fargo Propel 365 American Express card. So we talked about the earnings that Barclays can give you, you know, over $1,600, Capital One about $1,500 for the first 2 years. Wells Fargo is only about $800 over the first 2 years. And when we looked at the transparency score and how great the policies and rewards program is, it only got a 3 out of 5. So for those two reasons, that's what put it at the bottom of the list.
Truly, you're not just, no matter what you do and no matter how active you might be, given what the card offers, its transparency, et cetera, you're not going to get up to those big numbers because it's just not offered.
That's right. And then as far as an issuer goes overall, PNC Bank came in last for issuer credits. Again, lower policy scores and under $1,000 across 2 years in monetary value of rewards.
And what about these cards, Joe? Can these card companies decide we want to do better? Can they change what they're offering? In other words, if people say, look, I'm leaving you because you're not doing enough, or you're at the bottom of the list here, can these cards, do they have the option if they want to up their game?
They absolutely can, and that's one of the reasons that we put out these studies. So we talked before about rewards devaluation and why you should stick with maybe cash back if you're just starting out in the rewards game. So points and miles cards, like the two that I just mentioned, they're pretty vulnerable because credit card execs can jack up anytime they want the number of points or miles needed for a free flight or a free hotel room. They can do that whenever they want. There's no rules against that. And that's what these cards can do to really better themselves, you know, maybe lowering the number of points you need for a free flight or a free room, something like that.
So, in effect, the audience, i.e. the consumer, really does have and can have some impact on what these card companies do based on the kind of noise they make to these card companies. Is that a fair statement?
Exactly. So these issuers and card companies, they're competing for consumers' business now more than ever. And that's why we put out studies like this, and that's why we really try to educate consumers about what they're getting for their money and how to get the most bang for their buck. So consumers who leave reviews on websites or reach out to the customer service of these cards really can have an impact.
Wow. Okay, now tell us how we can learn more about this. How can you be reached? How can Wallet Hub, Card Hub be reached? What do I have to do, and what does it cost to me?
It costs you absolutely nothing, and you can find it on cardhub.com/edu. That's where all of our studies and reports live. You can look for other consumer information on wallethub.com. We do a lot of state-by-state breakdowns, city-by-city, so you can get some specifics there as well.
So this information is available. What you're simply saying is if you really want to make a difference and know more about this, you just go to cardhub.com and take a look through, I guess, kind of go through your site to see what is of interest and what affects me.
Yes, exactly. You can click on any links on the site, kind of compare and contrast any kind of financial product, but credit cards especially. And I think consumers don't realize, you know, you shop around for everything from new tires to put on your car to a new roof over your head. You know, we're constantly shopping around and comparing and contrasting. And you should do the same thing with your credit card because, again, we're leaving so much money on the table. You should, A, know what you're getting yourself into, and B, be searching for the best deal for your spending habits.
Wow. Joe Gonzalez, thank you so much. Spokesperson for Wallet.hub, Wallet Hub. You have been terrific. Thanks for sharing with us, and come back and see us again soon, would you?
Of course. Thanks for having me.
A delight. Folks, $4 billion you left on the table. Go get that money, honey. This is Home and Family Finance. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. I hope you've learned something. That's the whole idea, to make you financially fit. We're always pleased to be with you. And we'll be back the same time, same place. Thank you, Al Peterson, our engineer, Tali Berry, our producer. I'll be here looking for you, same time, same place. Have a good day.